This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Hey, what do you know? Who's looking? Look who's sitting right beside me.
Sup? Sup? How you doing, bruh?
Paul Gallant returns, and you know what has happened in the interim? The Mariners have not lost since you left town.
Well, now you're just setting me up for failure here, right? I mean, now if they lose to the Rockies tonight, now it's going to be my fault. Come on, that's not cool.
I'm not setting you up. I'm just observing a fact, which is that after you left this show on Thursday, departed to Houston, since you were gone, all the Mariners have done is clobber the league-leading Rays in four consecutive games, in which three of them they won in their final at bat, including planting an exclamation point with a shed long grand slam in the bottom of the 10th on Sunday.
You know, my mom is actually a Rays fan. She gave me a phone call after I got back from Houston yesterday afternoon, and she basically was pissed that the Mariners dared to beat her beloved Rays four games in a row over the weekend. And it's really, Danny, incredible the way that they were able to do it. The poise and toughness that this team has shown already this season, that's one thing. But to do it against the defending American League champions in the way that they did, where it's J.P. Crawford hitting a grand slam, it's Shed Long hitting a grand slam. Man, it's really something else. I'm blown away by what they were able to do. Seven wins in their last eight. And by the way, that's the second time over the past calendar month that they have done that.
You mentioned your lovely mother, Kitsy, being a Rays fan. Isn't it the Rays fan? Like, she's the one?
My stepdad also is a Rays fan.
Okay, too. So she's one of two fans. I've heard about them. I've just never actually met them. So that's fantastic to know that they do actually exist, and you can come across them in the wild. Admirable. I think that's probably the best word that I could describe the first half of this Mariners season. They've a year in which nobody expected all that much from them, a year in which most people pegged their wins in the 70s, in which Ryan Divish, who we talked to yesterday, said he thought that team was going to lose 90 games. That was before all the injuries have hit. They're two games above 500, and there's reason to feel pretty good. How do you get to the next step? Is this going to be more than an admirable season? Is this going to be more than, hey, that team tried hard and they were really tough, and man, look at how good they were in extra innings, and they came back from 17 deficits. They've had 17 come from behind wins. They've also had 17 come from ahead losses. So it's all balanced out. Like, it's an equal number of comebacks and blown leads, but in the overall scheme of things, this has been really, really good. Where do you go from here?
That's a great question, because if we're being honest with ourselves, this is unlikely to continue this way, right? Now, they're hitting better, but they still have the 29th best batting average in all of baseball. There are things happening of late that I'm really excited about, and it's making it a fun watch, and I can't wait to go to the ballpark for the first time tonight. But I think that's the part that we all have to be real with ourselves here. They are getting by the skin of their teeth very often.
You're right. They're also going to hit better the second half of the year. The reason they're going to hit better is because it's a young team. It's not just the sticky stuff being eliminated or any of that. They are a young team who is going to hit better in the second half of the season.
Right. And, you know, when you take a look at some of the players that are on them right now, I would assume Taylor Trammell, final month of the season, will be doing better than he is doing right now. I think that the more that we see out of both Shed Long, it's great to see him back out there, and also Jake Bowers, who seems to have something that maybe we're surprised by. I don't know that I expected him to hit 300 out of the gate, which is what he has done to this point. So, yeah, some of these young players, I think you hope that they do better. But I guess the real question is, when Jared Kelnick comes back, is Kelnick going to be able to hit? Because I think that's really going to be the ultimate difference in terms of, is this team going to be flirting with above 500 for the entirety of the year, or are they going to actually be annoying to some of those teams that are competing for a wild card? It's an uphill battle for them to get to that point, but maybe they can be that pain in the tuchus that they were to the Rays this weekend.
The Mariners are doing this with players that you didn't necessarily expect, and it doesn't mean they're not guys that are part of the young core, because Jake Fraley, Ty France, J.P. Crawford, Logan Gilbert. Like, those are four guys that I think you identify as, hey, they could be really significant pieces for the Mariners going forward. They're just not the main ingredients, right? Like, they're not the main. If this was Kyle Lewis and this was Jared Kelnick, this was Cal Raleigh, like, those are the guys that are really seen as the front line kind of float your boat prospects and future cornerstones. So it feels a little bit different. I mentioned Ryan Davis. He was on with us yesterday in the 9 o'clock hour, and he talked about sort of the in spite of the surprising success that this team has happened, kind of as it has enjoyed and created, there's kind of some unanswered questions that are lurking in the background.
Kyle Lewis, because of the knee surgery, you got to think that he probably can't be an everyday center fielder anymore. You're going to have to move into a corner. You're going to have to DH him 3 days a week. And that's a knee issue that's going to be there forever. You don't get new knees unless you're 50 and you get a replacement. Jared Kelnick, I don't think we can really truly say whether that was, you know, who he is as a big league player. I think he was rushed a little bit, but I understood the reasons. But yeah, also like Justin Sheffield, Justin Dunn, we don't really know who they are. Yeah, Sheffield was great last year. This year he's been inconsistent. Dunn has looked great early, but now he's injured. You know, what you mentioned White, all these guys, you don't truly know any of them anymore. Like, they're not established big league players.
Well, that's quite the wet blanket. I mean, that's one of those ones. I hear that, especially with the Kyle Lewis commentary, Danny, but that's something that we had discussed a little bit before. Yeah, you're right. A lot of uncertainty with the core pieces that you were expecting to carry you.
There's a different way to look at that, though, which is because on the one hand, you can say, hey, they're doing this with the guys that they didn't expect, and I'm not sure how those guys can, how long they can continue doing it. What if you looked at it and just said, hey, this team is doing this and those other prospects haven't started hitting yet? Those other guys haven't started pulling their weight. And I'm not sure if they're all going to do exactly what we expect. In fact, there's going to be some attrition there. But the fact that they're already, it seems to be turning in the right direction before you get that, and in spite of the injuries, these are really good signs for, if you look at it as a young nucleus instead of, hey, we're waiting for Kelnick to carry this team. If you're looking at this as a young nucleus, you're starting to find out some things, and that you've got some competitive toughness on this team. You've got some younger players that are playing their way into roles for the future. Shed Long might clobber his way back into your plans the way it's gone this homestand, where he's 8-for-25 and he's got a 600 slugging percentage.
Yeah, he's played really well. I guess my question in return to you, can we truly assume that all the young players are going to get better?
No,
and the texter asked that, and I think that they're misconstruing what you said there. It is one of those things where you expect guys to get better, but you know that some of them aren't. Some of them aren't going to be that. And just like that, we also know that, you know, with what we saw out of Jared Kelnick, if Kelnick comes up and he's having some struggles, then, I mean, it stands to reason that whether it's Cal Raleigh or if Julio Rodriguez by some miracle ends up on the big league roster by the end of the year, we'll see some of the same things. I am now no longer getting as excited, Danny, for those young players once they come up, and is labeling them the chosen one. I have learned my lesson.
And that's part of, we shouldn't let how his first stint in the major leagues think that he is somehow lesser of a player or will be lesser of a player. He's still really young, and he's got a lot of. It's just that it's not going to be, hey, he hits the ground and everything changes. We shouldn't let. Should you assume? No, you can't assume. But part of a rebuild is taking a chance and saying, yeah, there's a chance that this guy doesn't pan out, but I think it's more likely than not he is going to contribute. And by the way, we're going to pair him with a bunch of other guys of varying degrees of potential and certainty, and we think we're going to get a critical mass. I think the Mariners are getting closer to that critical mass of players where they rise and become a competitive team and are starting to beat playoff teams and win at a clip that would make you project them as a playoff contender. I hope that we start to see that the second half of the year, but absolutely I think they're in position to do that next year.
We're going to talk about this in a little bit further detail later, but is it possible to add to your critical mass? Do you think that they are actually looking to do that? And I know you guys talked with Jerry DePoto on Thursday, and it seemed like an extension for Mitch Haniger is probably unlikely, at least based off of what you guys were hearing.
I thought it was more likely they're going to end up trading Mitch and listening to offers about Mitch than extending Mitch. I also recognize that that might be as much about Mitch's feeling about a long-term extension,
gotcha,
as it is about any assessment that the Mariners have been. But I came away from Jerry's answer thinking that, okay, a trade is very much possibly on the table here. An extension, not so much.
And if that's the assessment, then that means it's probably unlikely that they would add to the critical mass as far as guys who are right away, you know, good. In terms of, as you've put it in our show email, potential guys that you toss into the bucket and you hope that eventually you reach that tipping point. Yeah, but that also means a little bit more patience down the road.
You're not going to get a better major league player right now for Mitch Haniger. Like, you're not right. going to get a better – you're not going to get a guy that comes in and plays, because Mitch Haniger's 30 and he's a former All-Star and all of those things. I don't see any way that they're going to help the on-field 2021 product at the trade deadline. I think there's moves that can be made that will help the long-term franchise. I don't know if you're going to help the 2021 product right away unless you're taking on salary. We got a lot to get to when it comes to that. We'll talk to Aaron Goldsmith. That's coming up at 9 a.m. Your Mariners, they host the Colorado Rockies tonight, closing out a 9-game homestand with a 2-game set here against the Rockies, riding a 4-game win streak. It's time for Front Page News.
This is the Front Page. Today's top two stories and why they matter. Every morning at 7:10, get what you need to know to start your day right now.
Oh, Danny. Frank Clark, man. This guy has had quite the interesting year. Now,
sometimes a man has to drive errands, and sometimes he drives those errands in a Lamborghini SUV, which, by the way, I did not know existed. And sometimes you got an Uzi in your duffel bag when you're driving said Lambo SUV.
I don't know if he was watching Scarface or if he's trying to join the Mossad, but, I mean, those guns have been illegal since 1986, whether semi-automatic or automatic. So, intense move. And, Danny, we also found out that on March 13th, he had been arrested. A car he was driving did not have front license plates on it. So when he was pulled over, they found a rifle and a gun as well in the back seat. Man, that guy... You can't help but look at what the Seahawks did in moving on from him and understanding why, even though over the last two postseasons, he has been really awesome for Kansas City.
Are we sure they weren't props for, like, a music video or a film production? He's in L.A.
Oh, my gosh. You can get fake ones, can't you? Like, why don't you just go get a BB gun?
Maybe the man just likes guns. Maybe he just likes guns, Paul.
But don't buy the illegal ones.
He's driving down the road, probably en route to some sort of scholastic debate.
Yeah,
I would assume.
Yeah,
like
sure.
there was some sort of it was a meeting of the minds, a think tank that he was going to while possessing an Uzi.
Yeah, the only person that I can remember bringing a handgun to a scholastic competition was Eric in Billy Madison, and that didn't go so well for him. No, you should never do that ever. What is he doing? That's just dumb. It's an Uzi. Come on, man.
I saw. Reaction being that, oh, the Seahawks knew something when they decided they didn't want to re-sign him. I temper that by saying, well, the Seahawks drafted him, and he was a productive player for there. So it's impossible to claim some sort of moral high ground or that we saw something coming when you drafted him and had him play. Man, guns like that scare the hell out of me. Like, I'll just be, and that the fact that he had an Uzi scares the hell out of me.
We'll talk more about Clark at 7:30.
The Front Page.
The other piece of news, Carl Nassib, who is a veteran defensive end in the NFL, posted a video on his Instagram yesterday in which he talked about and was open about his sexual orientation. Here's a clip from the video.
What's up, people? I'm Carl Nassib. Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get it off my chest. I really have the best life. I got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for. Pretty private person, so I hope you guys know that I'm really not doing this for attention. I just think that representation and visibility are so important. I actually hope that, like, one day videos like this and the whole coming out process are just not necessary. But until then, you know, I'm going to do my best and do my part to cultivate a culture that's accepting, that's compassionate. And I'm going to start by donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I'm happy that he feels comfortable and secure enough. I think it's a great visibility does matter. Representation does matter. I think that hopefully he's getting a lot of support and being embraced and accepted for who he is and embraced for who he is.
And I would think he would be.
You know, I think so, too.
I think that we have come quite a long way over the past decade, and obviously this is far from perfect, and an NFL locker room might be a little bit different than the average person walking up and down the street. But the other thing about this is, too, this is a little bit different than maybe some past
coming out stories that we've had in the NFL. I remember we had Michael Sam a couple of years ago. I mean, he's an established player, former third-round pick, playing for the Las Vegas Raiders. So it's great to see things like this. I hope that it does not become a massive distraction for him, you know, where he's just constantly being hounded about it, because clearly this is something he wanted to get off his chest and move on with his life like any other normal human being, you know? Like any other person on this planet that is maybe looked at in a different way because of their sexuality.
We should take the cues from him. We should take the cues from Carl Nassib about how he wants it covered going forward, about what he wants as far as how his teammates, and to make sure that he isn't discriminated against and that he isn't ridiculed or that nothing else happens, but also to make sure that the coverage itself of his sexual orientation is something that he's okay with. Like, we should take our cues from him with regard to that. That is Front Page News. It's time to open up the door, get the professor in here. It's our morning drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor Frank Clark found with an Uzi, two gun charges in 3 months. What kind of suspension do you think he'd be looking at from the NFL?
I'd say, you know, 4 to 6, maybe a little bit longer than that, because, I mean, Roger Goodell is not big on any kind of a gun violation. I think it's going to be hard to avoid this. He's probably going to have to plead. And if that's going to be the case, he's going to miss a significant amount of time this season. And it's really going to, you know, jeopardize the Super Bowl run of the Kansas City Chiefs, because, I mean, he's so important on their defensive line as a pass rusher. This is a big one. And the fact that he's not only just had one, but he's had two, and one of them involves an Uzi, this is really bad for him. But he put himself in that position.
He did. I was looking back through different examples of guys. Marshawn Lynch got suspended for 3 games while he was in Buffalo, and that was over a violation of the personal conduct policy, and it was primarily a gun charge. Mm-hmm. It ended up going down to a misdemeanor. So I would agree with you, John. I think that you're looking at it's probably the fact that it's an Uzi. Like, it's not just an unlicensed firearm. Plaxico Burress also got in trouble. I mean, he got thrown in jail for shooting himself, which mm-hmm. had to be the dumbest crime. That's New York City, and rules are different.
They wanted to make a statement with that one, too. Right?
In NYC, about having an unregistered or an unlicensed firearm, the law is extremely strict. But I would imagine that Frank is going to get a pretty stiff punishment from
that. Well, and of course, let's not forget the legal aspects of this, too. I mean, I think this is a felony, and so, is there going to be jail time involved? That could be a possibility, too.
There's not much of an explanation you can have where it's like, hey, why do you have this gun that's illegal to own? It's like, I left my permit in my other pants pocket. No, I can't. You can't own this. There was no paperwork you can fill out. You have a gun that you can't have.
Mm-hmm. No, this is bad. And again, I know the conversation is, you know, the Seahawks, did they not keep him because of, you know, character or anything like that? No, it had nothing to do with that. They liked his character. They liked him as a player. I mean, the difference is the Seahawks and John Snyder, very much like Bill Belichick, they don't like to go, you know, $17, $18 million on a pass rushing defensive end. And so that's just, it's a cost factor more than it is a character factor. But now the character has got him in big trouble with Kansas City and also with Los Angeles.
All right, John, do you want a Tim Tebow headline and quote? I think you might enjoy this.
Okay, yeah.
George Kittle, who held tight end university, right? Mm-hmm. It's the different position players. I think Von Miller started. The quarterbacks have always had their little club. We've seen different guys. Richard Sherman led a corner. George Kittle held tight end university. He was asked, well, why didn't you invite the backup tight end for Jacksonville? You know Tim Tebow. He's wearing a number in the 80s now. He could go to tight end. I'm going to read you the quote. So nothing against Tim Tebow, but I found it hard to invite. I wish nothing but the best for Tim Tebow, and I hope he has a fantastic season playing tight end. But it's hard for me not to invite a backup tight end on, let's say, the Giants, as opposed to inviting a guy who just started playing tight end position, because we do have limited spots, is mm-hmm. what Kittle said. Tebow didn't make the cut. That tickled my heart to read that.
Yeah, it did, because, again, he's not going to make the cut in Jacksonville. I mean, that's going to be pretty evident that I can't see him making the team there. You know, a tight end who hasn't played football in 9 years, changing positions after 9 years away from the league. You know, he's a 4'8 guy, so he's not fast. He does a few things in catching the ball, which I guess is okay, but is he going to be able to block? Because the one thing you know, Urban Meyer is going to run the ball. So, I mean, this to me was just a disaster. And I give George Kittle credit for at least, taking the positive stand and saying, you know what, let's not invite him.
Professor, Tom Brady was on The Shop Uninterrupted on HBO, and he's been really different since leaving New England. He is a lot more blunt. He said of a team that decided not to move on from their current quarterback for him, quote, "You're sticking with that bleeper bleeper, and I want to know, who do you think the quarterback was? I'm going to give you some options. Mitchell Trubisky with Chicago, Ryan Fitzpatrick with Miami, Derek Carr with Vegas, Gardner Minshew in Jacksonville, or was it Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco? You have to pick. Who do you think that Tom Brady was talking about and felt a little insulted that that team didn't move on from their quarterback for Brady?
Probably Mitch Trubisky more than anything else, because because what you're looking at is, like, I can't see him doing Jimmy Garoppolo because they share the same agent, Don Yee. So it's like he's not going to be critical, even though San Francisco was really the team he wanted to go to because he wanted to get back in the Bay Area. But I can't imagine that he's saying San Francisco. Maybe it could be Derek Carr. That could be a possibility, so that he could go to Vegas and be closer to the West Coast. But I'd have to think it's Mitch Trubisky because, I mean, you see how bad Trubisky was. You saw how bad the Bears is. And again, I wouldn't say Jacksonville because, I can't see Tom Brady going to a team that bad. And, going to Chicago, it's an average team, an 8-8 type of team that, it did make the playoffs last year at 8-8. So I'm thinking it's probably Trubisky.
John, what do you make of the Raiders this year? Is this Gruden's fourth year now?
Yeah.
It's Gruden's fourth season. There was the anticipation of a big shakeup in their front office after the draft. That didn't happen. I am personally surprised that Derek Carr has remained their quarterback throughout this. Usually Gruden grinds through quarterbacks and he wears on him. And I think he's probably, I think he's made Derek Carr's life, has been very demanding of him. I don't get the sense that there's a clock ticking on Gruden because he's got, a 10-year contract there.
Mm-hmm. Guaranteed.
But it doesn't, man, it feels like, it does not feel like that team is closer this year than they've been any of the past three.
No, because again, it's like there's so many things. And again, I think this is a matter that they just don't have a plan. They go in and it seems like each day, okay, well, let's do this. And there's no big master plan there. I mean, they've drafted poorly, particularly on defense. They've made a lot of mistakes at the wide receiver position. Derek did play well last year, and then they get into cap problems. And again, it's like, okay, so you haven't been to the playoffs in 4 years. It's like, how do you have cap problems? It's like, that's not good, to a point where they had to trade three veteran offensive linemen. So, I think, personnel-wise, it's not worked out well. Coaching-wise, again, I think John does a good job with the coaching part of it, but it's not working.
Professor, we always appreciate it. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
That is John Clayton. You can hear him this afternoon with Wyman and Bob. Are the Seahawks done with knuckleheads? Jaron Reed gone. Frank Clark, he's carrying his Uzi around with the Chiefs. Is this a different page for the Seahawks roster? We'll discuss next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
So, former Seattle Seahawk Frank Clark was arrested on Sunday night for felony illegal possession of a firearm. He also...
It was an Uzi!
Yeah, an Uzi.
It was a gosh darn Uzi.
Now, I know that there are some people texting in about the specifics of gun law. Let's just say in California, it's illegal to purchase one. That we know definitively. I think it's legal to have one in your possession already, but they were outlawed for sale in the United States in 1986. It is a gun that the Mossad used. Come on. This is pretty self-explanatory. You shouldn't be walking around with one of these things. I just don't understand why you would have it out and about for any reason whatsoever.
Here, I grew up in Oregon. I've been around a number of people who love firearms. I understand that. My dad was someone who owned a gun. He was not someone who had a collection of handguns, but many of the people he worked with and have been around. So I get that part of it. And if you're really into guns, it's not my thing. I don't understand it. But you also, I get that you have the right to do. The part about this is it's an Uzi in a duffel bag in a Lamborghini SUV. Like, there's the layers of just ridiculousness that it's all wrapped up in makes you realize that even if he is someone that just really likes his guns, there is a series of bad decisions made to get to this point, right? Like, you could dress it up all the different ways you want and the restrictions. Like, if you got an Uzi sticking out of a duffel bag that's in your Lamborghini SUV, like, there have been some calculations along the way that don't exhibit the best judgment.
So let's just start off with, first off, zip the bag all the way up. Second, put it in the trunk. How about that? Just for those first two steps. Third, how about don't do this less than 3 months after you were already arrested on gun charges during a traffic stop where you had a rifle and you had a pistol. So it's more, add all of this up, and my goodness, this guy has some of the worst judgment. And it had me thinking, Danny, about the actual Seahawks and where they're at when it comes to bringing in guys that have shown history of past judgment. And honestly, the first thing I thought of this offseason, I'm happy they moved on from Jaron Reed. It's partly because there was that incident that took place that saw him suspended for 6 games. We've talked about the details of that before. But also, just from the whole judgment side of, hey, they were going to just restructure his deal and still give him all of the same money. He said no, and now he is making less money in Kansas City. But
the stuff happened. Like, he got suspended before they signed him to an extension. And as much as you want to say, like, okay, they decided to turn the page on someone like Frank Clark, well, they only decided to turn the page because he was going to make $20 million a year. Like, they were totally cool with the risk of their view of his citizenship when they drafted him after he was arrested but not charged with a count of domestic violence. So there's part of me that feels like, how much of this is just less conscious decision-making on the part of the Seahawks, and just that those guys happened to get in trouble when they weren't employed, or one guy that did get in trouble is no longer employed by Seattle.
Right. And I mean, Alden Smith, now a member of the team, and we're still waiting to see what happens. I know there were conversations yesterday on the midday show about how the Seahawks need him to not be the next Quentin Dunbar. And honestly, I'm not expecting anything out of Alden Smith at this point.
I hope Alden Smith stays sober. I hope he stays sober, and if he can play football and didn't assault that guy down in New Orleans, if that wasn't what it appeared to be and as it was described in the initial, I have no problem with him playing with the Seattle Seahawks. But if he did assault that dude, or if anything else happened, like, I don't have any, if from a football perspective, I don't have much long-term invested into Alden Smith's development or staying on this roster.
Right. He is, if he works out, a plus. But I look at last year, Dallas moved on from him, even with that 3-sack game that he had against Seattle. And that's a really cheap player that's obviously had lots of strikes against him. And it's Dallas that we're talking about who moved on from him, a team with a wretched defense.
But like, that, what you're saying is, like, has Seattle stopped signing guys who, like, we've called them knuckleheads, but are people who've had previous scrapes with the law or previous trouble with their... I mean, the fact that Alden Smith was signed points to the fact that they're still going about it the same way, right? And by the way, lots of teams do that, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that. I just don't know if the fact that Frank Clark got in trouble and has now been arrested a couple times is a symbol of, like, okay, Seattle changed its citizenship criteria, and they're dodging problems like that.
Well, honestly, they've changed their citizen criteria from this perspective. Remember when John Schneider said that guys like this, we won't go after guys like this. And I think he has since then softened his words on that front. And I'm sure that they have conversations, and we'll see what took place actually in New Orleans. I believe that's what we are waiting for before Alden Smith eventually shows up with the Seahawks, I would assume at some point during training camp, right?
I think July 14th is, he has a hearing scheduled there in Louisiana.
Right. So we'll see what takes place there. I understand why teams do it. But it is interesting when some of these teams do, at least in the past, a long time ago, come out and seem to be on a little bit of a moral soapbox when ultimately they are willing to give guys second chances. And sometimes it's going to work out, but other times you're going to see what happened in Kansas City right now, where I wonder how many games Frank Clark plays this season.
The moral soapbox bothers me because I think most teams are hypocritical when they say that. I think it's unrealistic to expect an NFL team to be able to foresee potential legal situations involving players when their workforce is a bunch of 20-year-old millionaires. I think that guys are into all sorts of stuff. I think guys in their 20s make bad decisions constantly, whether it includes alcohol, whether it includes drugs, or whether it includes firearms. And I don't think an NFL team is responsible for the decisions that their players make. I think you can try to stay away from certain personality types, and certainly if you want to say we're not going to hire anybody that has a criminal history, but honestly, I don't know if that's the best way to go about it. Some dudes make mistakes, and then they don't ever make that mistake again, and they get scared straight. I go back to J.R. Sweezy. Sweezy had a tough time in college. Like, there was a point where he was cited or maybe even arrested for shoving a bus driver on an event at NC State where it was a marijuana test. He was being a dumb kid, and he got to the pros, and he turned out to be Bruce Irvin. Bruce Irvin got arrested after the combine. Like, that was he was kind of being a dumb kid, and guys constantly then turn a page when they get to the pros. I don't expect a team to avoid those sort of things like they're running into with Frank Clark. I think what's most telling is how you react to those things.
And I imagine Kansas City's going to keep him employed.
They get the benefit, though, if they get some of the money back. Yeah, I would guess that they're not going to fire him. Probably right. Not until after this season. He probably moves on after this year.
Because he has been really good for them in the playoffs the last couple of seasons. If we're talking about another guy.
They've already spent the money, right?
Exactly.
Like, they've already spent the money.
Yeah.
And teams tend to, like, if after you've already spent the money, you cut that dude a lot more slack than you would Alden Smith, who doesn't have much leeway here.
The big thing here is, and again, I don't want to get into the semantics with all the gun people right now. Because, again, I actually, I don't have an issue with guns. I don't. But you're just an absolute moron if you're driving around in your car and your Uzi's sticking out of the bag when you just got pulled over for gun charges. Just 3 months before, you know, like that to me, that's the poor judgment that Frank Clark needs to learn from, and hopefully the Seahawks have less of those guys in the future. Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. He is Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. Jared Kelnick's biggest adjustment in AAA is not the one that you're probably thinking of. You'll find out what it is next right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Got some texts here regarding the gun charge against Frank Clark and whether it was valid for him to be pulled over, the legality of the... Here's the deal. Frank Clark in March was in a car and cited and charged with gun charges. At the very least, isn't that, if you're really into guns and that's the thing you like, there are very specific rules and regulations you have to follow as far as getting them licensed, where you carry, like, there are restrictions to that. And part of being a responsible gun owner, at least around all the people that I've known who are responsible and believe in the rights and the Second Amendment and all of those things, is you have to follow those rules. In March, he got a pretty clear sign that, like, hey, what you're doing here, yeah, I don't care how much you love guns or whatever it is. Like, you have to have, and now to get caught again, and this is a felony charge he's facing. Miss me with all of the sort of stuff about the right to own the firearm and all of whether it was legal.
Because that's not what it's about.
He put himself in a situation where he was arrested and facing a felony charge because of an Uzi that was sticking out of a duffel bag in his Lamborghini SUV. Like, that's some. There's a series of bad decisions that led to that.
If you've ever fired a gun, you realize the immense power that it has. I've done it a couple of times at a firing range. And if you are somebody who responsibly owns a gun and you see somebody do something like this, that should make you mad, because these morons are the ones that are screwing it up for you. That's the way I would look at it here. Okay? Miss me with all these laws. I just don't care. You know? You can text away if you want.
It's Danny and Gallant. Jared Kelnick remains in Tacoma right now. And Andy McKay, who is the Mariners farm director, Andy McKay is a fascinating interview. I love Andy. I love his thoughts on development. I've really enjoyed hearing and talking to him in the past at spring training about the way that they look at developing players. And quite honestly, a lot of what he says about their player development, I think, makes a ton of sense. He was on with Wyman and Bob, and he was asked, just specifically, what are you looking for in Jared Kelnick? And it made it clear that this isn't about results. This isn't about a physical adjustment for Jared Kelnick. This is about his mental approach.
He went up, he had some success, ran into a tough stretch. I'm really not looking for performance in Jared Kelnick in AAA because of all the things that I'm concerned about, Jared being a good major league player is not one of them. He is a good player. He's going to be good in the major leagues. What I'm looking for when he's down here is really just how he handles adversity, how he handles bad at-bats, how quickly he can get from one at-bat to the next at-bat, how quickly he can go from one bad swing and get back to his approach for the next swing, how quickly he can go from game to game and not letting it pile up on him. And so far, he's been able to do that down here.
That was the problem everyone noticed. That was the thing that I remember. The people that were already out on Kelnick as soon as he came up, Danny, that was the thing that they saw. They were saying, oh, he's petulant at the plate. Oh, he looks like he has too much of a temper. Well, what they were seeing, I think, was a guy who was just so frustrated, and that's what he has to learn. And I wonder if that is possible. I imagine for some athletes that maybe you can't get past the failures that you might suffer at a sport like baseball. You can't get over the fact that you struck out. And maybe that's something he'll always deal with in some way. I'm not so sure it's as easy as, oh, well, he's young and he'll learn, you know?
I don't know if this is about, hey, don't react emotionally to a bad swing or a bad pitch selection. Here's what I do know it's about. It is about getting you have to reset before the next pitch. You have to flush that out. You can't let the same bad swing or same bad decision beat you twice. You have to reset. And so when he said, I agree. I think Jared Kelnick probably is always going to be emotional and reactive. I think that's part of his DNA, and I think that's probably part of what makes him a really good player. But he can't have that frustration affect his next swing. He can't have his frustration, and that's what Andy McKay is saying very clearly here. This is about how do you get in a rut as a player, right? We were talking about that. Getting out of a slump is a skill.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things about that is recognizing the things that put you in a slump, and that's having your frustration impact your approach, whether it's pitch selection, whether it's the way that you're swinging. You have to find a way, whether it is getting a burst of emotion that then allows you to reset, or whether it is taking the Russell Wilson approach, which is, what does Russell do? He talks about resetting to a neutral mind. Like that's that, whether it's good or it's bad, it's resetting to a neutral position before the next play. That's what Jared Kelnick needs to find. And however he gets to that, it's very clear what Andy McKay is saying. This wasn't a physical failing. This was
right.
Him getting increasingly frustrated and having that frustration compound his difficulties because it started affecting his decision-making process and his swing.
Jerry DePoto, when he was on with us earlier this year, had said something too about you can slow your heart rate down, essentially.
Yep.
And
yes.
I heard that, and that sounds like quack science to me. It does, but I understand that he's not talking about it from the perspective of, hey, this is like some science that is definitive that we can do it. It's about the approach. It's about the approach afterwards, isn't it? It's about.
I think it's about slowing your heart rate.
I just don't think that's possible. I just do not believe that.
Have you ever worn a heart monitor when you exercise?
No, but you know, when I run at the gym, there's those little handlebars that can
the
take
bars?
Your pulse, right?
If you take deep breaths, like after you sprint, if you take deep breaths, you can slow your heart rate quicker. There are ways to do that. I think he is physically saying that a sped up heart is a symptom or usually a sign with stress or like being agitated, fight or flight, like that there's an adrenaline, and learning to slow your heart rate is a symptom of you getting in control of your emotions and getting yourself to that neutral place. I think he's literally talking about slowing your heart down. Paul's brain just exploded.
No,
it just exploded it right there.
Maybe
that's
it's,
right. He means literally slowing your heart rate down.
Here's why I have questions about that. And it's based off my own personal experience, which is not a blanket. Let's talk about everybody and their ability to slow their heart rates down. I know personally I cannot. I have tried. There will be moments where I get extremely anxious and it starts pounding. It's happened a lot during interviews where I know that there's this question I want to ask and I'm waiting to get it out, and the anxiety building up to it is something that even if I try my hardest, I know it's not going to. So I have to kind of just go through it. So that's just from a me perspective, and I know that I've tried. I know that I've tried. It's one thing, though, you know, what you're talking about is one thing where it's not really a mental thing, isn't it? I mean, if you're running and then you slow down and you take or you take deep breaths while you're running, that's different than when you're standing at the plate and you just swung a baseball bat and you are trying to calm yourself down. I think it's a little bit different than that.
Same mechanism. Paul, you can slow your heart rate
down. But the cause is different, isn't it? Isn't the cause of the actual heart palpitation changes? It's based off of anger, emotion, as opposed to actual physical exercise.
And it's the same mechanism to slow it down in each case. It's the same mechanism. The same. We're going to next time, whether it is woo-saw and you tug on your earlobe to try and calm yourself.
Should I do
we're
that?
We're going to teach Paul to calm, to slow his heart rate.
Okay.
And we're going to get Brock Heward in here and see if that excites him for Blue 42.